Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Stay connected to your Cleveland Browns for the latest draft news and photos and videos and more from the team. Like them on Facebook at Cleveland Browns. Follow them on Twitter at Browns and on Instagram at Official Browns. Vic Carucci with Nathan Zagura of Football Tuesday. We've got Megan Rock tweeting throughout the show, and we encourage your calls and tweets, 216-578-0850, and tweet us at Browns underscore daily. And we've got Eddie from Westlake on the line. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
You know what? This Alex Mack situation, it's become apparent to me that Alex Mack, the reason why Alex Mack is out here trying to shop this deal here is that he didn't get what he wanted to hear. He didn't get the offer he wanted to get when they sat down and met. And, you know, in NFL, guys want to get paid. And this guy, he hasn't missed a game, and it's 5 years in the league. And I know at the end of the day, you know, a center is worth a certain amount of money, but because it's a position that it's important, and it's a position that that the Browns, you know, they have, you know, control of the situation right now because it's a guy that's an all-pro type center. But the thing about the Browns is that, you know, with this new salary cap restrictions, with this rolling 4 years where you got to spend 89%, you know, the past regimes and the past mindset of GMs where they're saying, hey, you know what, we build through the draft, and we do build through the draft. But the truth of the matter is the Browns have never historically had any players to say we're going to re-sign our own players. They weren't good enough to get the type of offers that we're talking about getting.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing I don't know, Eddie, I appreciate what you're saying, and it's obvious, you're right, that the group that went out to California, the hierarchy of this football team, to try to get it done, as you said earlier, Nathan, it wasn't just a chit-chat. It was to get the deal done, make it happen,
right. And
it didn't happen. So clearly from Alex Mack's perspective, his representative's perspective, not enough was offered. But the question is, how much was offered? And did the Browns make it competitive enough that he should have at least gotten, you know, their attention, or that they got his attention? And from everything I've heard, it was pretty darn competitive. It was the kind of money that definitely should have made him stand up and take notice, just given what he's been paid and what the position pays and what the market value is in the league. And I think the recognition by the Browns has been that you are, you know, the best center in the league. We think you're really good. We want you to be a big part of our team for a long time to come. Now, for why he turned it down, those are his reasons. And he's got every right to again, see if it was simply a case of this was great, but let me see if I can get something better. Well, maybe it comes down to that. But I think there's certain risks to doing that. And one of the risks is being played out right now. And that is, as you said, the backlash that he gets that we've been talking about here from the idea of flirting with Jacksonville.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe you wonder if what he's trying to get out of this, because I believe, and again, I do not know, but I feel very confident in saying the offer that was made to Alex Mack would have made him an elitely played player at his position. He would have been amongst the highest, if not the highest paid player at his position as
that's
a center in the National
too.
Football League.
Yeah.
So that's the sense of it that I have, and I think that he wanted to see what was out there. And again, like I said, I don't begrudge anybody if they think that they can find more money. Go ahead and take a look, take a gander. But I think the way that in some ways that it's gone down has created, whether it is true or not, created the perception that he does not want to be here.
Yeah, no, there's really no other way to look at it until we see how it plays out. The perception's there. I don't know if it's an accurate one, but it's there. So,
right, and that's it. All right, time now for a little after further review with our great producer Jason Gibbs. What's up, Gibbs?
Hello, guys.
After further review.
Hey, buddy.
Welcome back, Nathan. Question number one: 1 year from now, which free agent signee will have had the biggest impact on the 2014 Cleveland Browns?
A year from now, which I've got to say, a year from now it'll be Ben Tate, because that running game was so sorry, and he's it's really he's got the best chance, the most obvious chance to do the most because of that reason. Question is, you know, will the standard be for his sake, you know, great and elite? I don't know, but great and elite. You know, really good. Good and really good would take the Browns to a much higher level than they've been. So we'll sit there and say he was the most productive.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Ben Tate as well with a maybe a potential to tie with Carlos Dansby, because getting off the field on third down, getting coverage from the linebacking position will be a massive change for this team. Ben Tate's the obvious because there was no ground game. He could come out and rush for, you know, 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, and completely change the tenor of this offense and its ability to be versatile both running and throwing the football. Defensively, though, Carlos Dansby has an opportunity to change the way this team performs on third down and in nickel situations, and that could be massive.
After further review,
question number two, obviously a lot made of the whole Kyrie Irving, Josh Gordon situation. With that being said, should players in one sport air potentially dirty laundry about players in another sport when they're in the same city?
I don't have a huge problem with this. I'm going to say it depends on the situation. I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but I think in this particular case, there was a viability with it because Josh Gordon knew and knows one of the people involved. And I think that's really the Deion Waiters connection with him is legit because they know each other. So he offered it, and it was, and I also think I like it. I like it in a sports town when you know about those relationships between players. Irving's reaction to it certainly wasn't the best, and to tell Josh Gordon to kind of mind his own business, I'm not sure that played better for Irving than it did for Gordon. Honestly, I think it kind of made Kyrie maybe look a little bad.
Yeah, listen, as long as you're not telling somebody how to play their respective game that they're a professional in and you aren't, I'm fine with it. I have no problem with it whatsoever. And as I'm kind of getting up to speed on this situation, it seems like a small comment was turned by Flash was turned into a big deal by Kyrie and got a little unnecessary.
After further review,
question number three, guys, how will Nate Burleson's signing impact the Browns the most? I should say, in what way?
Well, I think the obvious way right now, because there's no other, we don't know of any other option on this football team for a number two receiver. He gives them a number two receiver. I mean, they don't have one. They have one now in Nate Burleson. Will there be one to emanate from the draft? Maybe. We'll see. Even if they draft a player within the first couple of rounds at the receiver position, I'm not 1,000% sure that guy will be ready to be the number two guy and give you everything you need at the number two position for as good as this draft is purported to be at the receiver position. But I look at Nate Burleson as being, you know, an instant addition who should step in the number two role and be viable in the number two role, provided he stays healthy.
Yeah, to me, what he's going to do on the field is very good. He can play, as I said, outside as the number two, can play inside in the slot. Before he broke his arm last year, was averaging over 6 catches and 79 yards a game for Detroit. So I'm not concerned about what he does on the field. To me, his biggest impact is going to come off the field, in the locker room, on the practice field, in addition to what he can do on the games. Because a guy who's played with Randy Moss and Calvin Johnson, been beside them, seen them work, is a guy who can really help with a player like Josh Gordon. He can be that mentor. He can say, I've seen some of the greats, the all-time greats, and you can get there. This is how you got to get there. This is what Calvin Johnson does to be as good as he is. And I think the leadership that he can bring to this young wide receiver group, a group that really isn't going to have a lot of experience, because in my mind, you go out and you draft, you add a guy, say whether it be an Allen Robinson, a Jordan Matthews, or even somebody at the end of the first round, an Odell Beckham, somebody like that, Brandon Cooks, my guy, Kelvin Benjamin. When you're going to have another young receiver there, Andrew Hawkins is not young in age, but young in experience in the National Football League. To have someone who's been there and done it for so long at a high level and been around some of the best to ever play the game, Nate Burleson's going to provide an invaluable level of leadership experience and kind of that confidant, that mentor to these young players that I think is going to be exceptional.
After further review,
All right, guys, NFL Network and NFL.com, they've been doing the greatest quarterback of all time, and the fans have spoken, and they 72% voted Johnny Unitas as the greatest quarterback of all time over your boy Joe Montana. Nathan Zagara.
Was there like an age restriction on who was able to vote?
No, but 70. Good question. Wow. 72%.
I mean, that's just a tough thing to say, because if you think of 72% of the football viewing audience today, how many of them even saw Johnny Unitas?
It's a great question.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I
that's
was
an interesting outcome
saw,
to me, because you usually have like some type of a recency bias.
Apparently, there's a lot of older viewers of NFL Network.
Well, you wouldn't think
me.
They would be online, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't think.
Apparently they are. Well, that's interesting. Okay.
All right. Well, that being said, guys.
Their kids voted for it.
Take the following five quarterbacks.
Johnny Unitas.
Johnny, you know him. He played for
the Colts. You'll get no soup.
They're stuffing ballot boxes.
Yes.
Take the following five quarterbacks and rank them from number five to number one. Johnny Unitas, Joe Montana, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Dan Marino.
All right, this is a good one. I'm putting Montana at the top of the list, not because I'm just living in the moment or living in
it's
in
not
a
even the moment,
moment
anymore.
And it's not even the moment. He's been out of the game long enough, and I had the great fortune of covering his whole career in the NFL. So he's number one without a doubt. I am going to put Johnny U number two, and it's respect. It's not that I got to see him as a journalist. And honestly, I didn't get, you know, I was a kid. I mean, when he was playing, he was near the end of his career by the time I was really starting to get into football as a fan. But the research I've done in it for any number of projects through the years and just for being a fan of this game and talking with any number of people who've covered him, who were around him, who observed him, and can really give you comparisons and those who were in the league as coaches and such. Through the years, I'm basing that opinion on a lot more than just, well, look at his numbers. And then I'm putting Tom Brady third. I think Tom Brady belongs in this group for sure. The Super Bowl victories alone, accomplishing as much as he accomplished in this league with less, not having the greatest surrounding cast during the course of the Patriots Super Bowl dynasty. And after that, I'm going to go with Peyton Manning. And I honestly think, and you know, Manning could have moved a notch higher had the outcome of Super Bowl 48 been different. But Super Bowl 48, unfortunately, weighs the heaviest on him. It is just what I thought would happen, is he would pay the price in large measure for the way that game went or didn't go for his sake. So he's on this list, but he's going to be where I have him right now. In fourth place. And then Dan Marino, who is, I will still say this, the best pure passer I have ever seen in football. The absence of championship accomplishment will hurt him, could have driven him higher on this list as well, but I can't do it with only one chance to win a Super Bowl, and then the rest of it in terms of his career was just a tremendous body of work, again, based on the purity of his throwing.
I'm going to go Joe Montana, number one overall for me. I do have some bias from being from the Bay Area, but I think he's the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. Number two, I'll go Johnny Unitas there. Obviously, you have to respect what he's done. I can't say that I personally have gotten to see him. Obviously, I've gotten to see highlights, et cetera, and, you know, watch retrospectives and things like that, but I'll put him second. I'm going to go with Tom Brady third, Peyton Manning fourth, and Dan Marino fifth. And Peyton Manning, you know, he doesn't have a winning record in the playoffs. He's the greatest. If this was just a regular season quarterback list, I'd maybe put Peyton Manning number one, but it's not. It's about winning. And Peyton Manning, for whatever reason, has not been able to get it done when he needs to in the biggest of moments. And yes, he does have that one Super Bowl, but that's it. And when you think about how good he's been, for how long he's been that good, and how many times he was the number one seed in his conference going into the Super Bowl, the fact that he has been unable to be a multiple-time Super Bowl champion weighs very heavily on my mind in terms of my ranking. The guy that I'm surprised it's not on here that would be in the top three all-time for me is John Elway. How does he not even get into number five?
Elway has to be.
What?
Because we're in Cleveland. Well, I'm not putting him in my top five.
Was he in the NFL Network's top five, or I figured you just gave us what their final five was?
Their final five were those five that I mentioned.
That's an egregious oversight.
But if he was – But if he was, Gibbs would have kicked him out.
Yep. He would have kicked him out, which is fair. I'm fine
thing.
With that.
And it is a fair Cleveland thing. And,
yeah, it's
and
a fair
that
bias.
That heartache, and that bias. Like it's so troubling. I can't even get the words out. But no, it is. It's hard to not see him in this conversation because he belongs for sure. But the body of work that he had is, you know, it ended with John Elway. It's the way it ended, right? I mean, think about it, that he went out on the highest note. I covered him enough to know that those repeated times, including those times that he would beat the Browns to get to the Super Bowl and then didn't do anything with it. I thought that added insult to injury. The injury of what Browns fans and the Browns incurred was, if you're going to get, you know, step over the Browns to get to the championship, then don't embarrass yourself in the Super Bowl. And that's what those Elway Broncos teams did then.
55-10 against the 49ers. I remember that one. That's why Joe Montana's number one on this list.
That's right. All right, we got much more coming up. We want to hear from you. 216, still time for that. 216-578-0850. And also your tweets at Browns_daily. He is Nathan Zagura. I'm Vic Carucci. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily. It is driven proudly by Liberty Ford.